Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Benjamin. Welcome to the podcast. I'm the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And my name is Ben Bolin, that is. Scott, I usually don't even say my last name because I'm the only Ben here. You're like the closest thing to the other Ben.
Yeah, I guess so. Ben and Ben show. Ben and Benjamin.
Ben and Benjamin?
Doesn't really work.
Benjamin and Ben?
Yeah.
Mr. B?
Yeah.
Sometimes I call you that in my head.
The Benjamin show, we're fine.
Scott.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, just momentarily, I think the vehicles we're about to talk about are some of the coolest around.
I know. You've been excited about this one since the very beginning, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'm excited about it. I really am. I like watching the footage of these vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. The old footage of this stuff because it's really, really cool. It just looks surreal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about actually doing it myself. I'm not sure.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think so. We'll get to it.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's destroy the suspense.
Okay.
Dispense with the suspense.
Yeah,
how about that?
Very good.
For any of our listeners who love the show so much they didn't even read the title. We're talking about lunar rovers today.
Yeah.
Which are, of course, the vehicles that your friendly neighborhood rocket scientists and engineers at NASA and other space exploration agencies design for astronauts who mm-hmm. think, well, the moon's small, but it's a big place, and I don't want to walk everywhere.
Yep, driving on the moon.
Driving on the moon, my friend.
Driving on the moon. That's got to be fun. I mean, it really does. I bet it is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, we'll get to the very end before I say why I may not want to do this.
Okay.
It's a fear.
So we should start at the beginning and then go through the middle first. I'm sorry.
Yeah, something like that.
I saw some. I think that's from Alice in Wonderland.
Okay, gotcha.
All right. So let's see. I guess in 1972, is that where we really?
Well, I guess we could start 1 year earlier.
Okay.
Because that's the end of the program, really.
Yeah.
The Apollo missions, you're probably familiar with the Apollo missions. They carried these lunar rovers with them to the moon. There were a lot of moon exploration projects happening at the time, particularly these missions here, Apollo mission 15 through 17.
Yes.
And those were the missions that they carried lunar rovers with them. The first person to drive in the moon. Can you imagine being that? Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be, I would still be talking about it.
Yeah, probably is still. I don't know. I'm not sure the whereabouts of David Randolph Scott, who was the first, he was an American astronaut, the Apollo 15 astronaut who first, his claim to fame was he first drove on the moon in 1971, other than being a really cool astronaut.
Yeah, which is in itself.
Exactly. I mean, to
cool.
say you've been on the moon, unbelievable, mm-hmm. but to have driven on the moon, mm-hmm. even cooler, and to be the first, another notch.
It's like impossibly cool.
Yeah.
It's priceless.
Yeah.
What kind of, these vehicles, what kind of rovers were these 1972 ones like?
They're called lunar roving vehicles.
Okay.
And they're electric because you can't have an internal combustion engine. There's no air to burn.
Mm,
mm-hmm. So they have to be electric. They've got 2 36-volt batteries.
Okay.
I'm I guess we don't need to go through the whole frame and every little bit about it.
Yeah,
and
we don't suspension. Have to.
But basically, it has two seats that look like lawn chairs that are this woven material. I think that the astronauts were strapped into these with Velcro seatbelts. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Velcro seatbelts. Did you read about this?
I had heard about this.
Because they had to hold them in somehow. And they had they had handholds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they held on. They had handholds. The steering's a little different. This thing was about the original LRV was about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, right?
Mm-hmm.
About the size of a bug. So they're strapped on, and they had some, we call them, I guess for the radio, I'll call them OS handles.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know the ones in your car by the window where you grab on to things. They had something like that, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So I would think it would be low because there's no body really built around this.
It's the position's different.
It's like a rolling frame almost, really.
Yeah.
So again, it's electric. I think they had their feet strapped in as well, so they didn't kind of float up because, you know, you've got to deal with that space.
Did they? I could see that. That's cool.
Foot straps or something to slide their feet into at least, which is a good idea. There's no steering wheel. I think you just mentioned that, right?
Yeah, the steering is a little different.
Stick control?
Mm-hmm.
T-shape handle? Yeah. Oh, one other cool thing. The steering control, I think, was in the middle of the car so that either side could drive the vehicle because the stick control controls acceleration, braking, turning, everything. So, either seat could drive.
Which ties into something that we can talk about a little bit later in the show, which is NASA's necessary obsession with redundancy.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a lot of good reason for that in this case.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of really good reason for that in this case.
There is no AAA in space, my friend.
Imagine having a flat tire, you know, you're several miles from the spacecraft, and you've got to somehow get back. So this thing was capable of, you know, one wheel could completely malfunction. The other three would be able to handle it. I don't know about if two happened to malfunction. That would be bad.
Well, you'd have to kind of catty corner your way back.
Exactly. They were all powered. They were all individually powered. They could all steer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were made. This is pretty interesting, I thought. The tires are made of, they've got aluminum frames. There's an inner and outer frame.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also, they're made of galvanized piano wire.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah, and they've got these titanium treads, I guess, that have a chevron pattern cut into them. So very, very strong tires, obviously. But from what I remember, I think I remember hearing that one of the astronauts seems like he's a little rough on the lunar rover.
Yeah.
One astronaut in particular, and I wish I had the guy's name, and I want to say that it's Sermon? Is that his name? Gene Sermon?
Oh, yeah, Eugene Cernan.
Yeah, I think he's the one, I think. And I don't mean to pin this on him if it's not him,
right,
but I know that
right.
he did do some accidental body damage to the lunar rover.
Oh, with the hammer on the spacesuit, right?
This is on the final mission, on Apollo 17. The hammer snagged a fender, I guess, and it ripped the fender off, and they can't really drive it without a fender because the moon's surface is
full of dust.
It's dusty
it's
and
dust.
Sand, you know, just sand, whatever the material is.
Worst static ever. Basically.
Exactly, and so if they're driving through this, it's going to be flying all over them. They somehow fashioned a fender out of what they had.
They MacGyvered it. I'm going to go ahead and make that a verb.
MacGyvered
it.
What'd they use?
They used a laminated map and some duct tape.
See?
That qualifies, right?
Brilliant.
Well, yeah, I mean, astronauts are smart people, right?
Yeah, I mean, duct tape. Isn't that cool? They fixed it with duct tape.
Yeah.
It kind of gives me some credibility at home.
Does it?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm going to remember that. I'm going to reference Commander Gene Cernan next time I have to do some duct tape.
And I think they said, and now I remember I said I didn't want to pin this on him.
Right.
But you remember the super tough tires I was telling you about, the piano wire
tires?
Yeah. I think he damaged a tire as well.
Wow.
I know.
That's tough.
I don't know what he's up there doing. I mean, it's full of craters.
The moon's a crazy place, Scott. It's crazier than Vegas.
I guess so. But you think you would protect this thing awful, you know, just be a little more careful around it, I guess.
Right. And it goes into redundancy no matter how much effort an astronaut or someone in the control room or in the design team makes to create a perfect, foolproof lunar vehicle. The truth is that we've barely been to the moon in humanity's history, so everything we do is a prototype and a learning experience. And check out this segue, Scott. NASA has also kind of learned from their mistakes and tried to evolve, right?
True, yeah, they're evolving. Yeah, that's right, because there are more vehicles on the way other than the lunar rover. There's a couple of prototypes that are, well, they've been in the works for a long time, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they've tested them. They've tested them in a desert environment. First is the lunar truck. Yes. And Lunar Truck is it's pretty cool looking, really.
Yeah.
Kind of a cargo. It's very, very, I guess, job specific.
Sure.
You know, it's I don't know if that's the right way or not, but it's not really for carrying people. Mm-hmm. I believe two astronauts can ride this thing, but the driver stands on a platform that can be raised and lowered, has a huge carrying capacity compared to the lunar rover, which I think could only carry, you know, in addition to everything else, I think it could only carry about 60 pounds of material, like moon rocks and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, the moon, it's made of blue cheese, and they wanted to bring a lot of it back.
Right.
So they brought...
for the chicken wings.
Exactly. They had a lot of... well, not just a reasonable amount of space for moon rocks, things like that. But they did have a lot of other weight, you know, some of the equipment, like the, you know, and just their suits themselves, the vehicle itself, you know, that's a lot of stress on an electric vehicle.
Because we're already talking hundreds of pounds, on the order of hundreds of pounds, just with the, let's see, wait, two astronauts and suits and backpacks, right? That's about 800 pounds.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting here, we should also point out...
800 pounds.
I know, yeah.
That's crazy.
They're tough. They're tough people.
I guess so.
But also we should point out, as everyone knows, gravity on the moon is not gravity on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these numbers might sound a little bit screwball, like the LRV weighing about 460 pounds on Earth, but on the moon, you know, it's different.
I understand. Yeah, it's like, is it...
It's like one ninth or something?
I want to say one sixth.
One sixth.
I think it's one sixth. Mm-hmm. But it does have a pretty good carrying capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, based on its, or compared to its weight.
Yeah.
And one quick thing before we move on to the lunar truck.
Yeah.
The Apollo, I believe that one of the lunar rovers was left on the surface of the moon.
So all we have to do is pick it up?
You know, I'm not 100% sure about this, Ben. You know, did you come across this anywhere in your research? Because I meant to dig up more on this, and if you didn't, don't worry. It's,
okay.
But I did find this...
I apologize.
That's all right. I found this intriguing question because... Yeah. And I promise we'll get to the truck.
It's the ultimate garage find there, if
was
there
a,
is one.
Exactly. But, yeah, well, whatever. anyways, the... I found this intriguing question. It was on a science site. It was asking if you would be able to see the flag that the astronauts have left on the surface of the moon or other objects that have been left up there.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things, and then this kind of pointed me in the direction that maybe it is still up there. The answer is no. You can't see anything on the moon that we've left there. And
that makes
the reason
sense.
Is because we don't have telescopes large enough to do that on Earth. We just haven't built one that big. But at the time of this writing, and I don't know if this has changed since, but the largest telescope is the Keck telescope in Hawaii, which measures 10 meters in diameter. The Hubble Space Telescope is 2.4 meters in diameter, just to give you a comparison.
Okay.
So this Keck telescope in Hawaii is 10 meters in diameter. To be able to see the lunar rover on the surface of the Earth, of the surface of the moon, on the moon, you would need a telescope that is 75 meters in diameter. So you're talking almost eight times the size of the largest that we have right now. That's massive. I mean, so, you know, the ones that you've got in your backyard, they point out that, you know, your 6-inch or 8-inch telescope is not going to do it in that
case. I'm so tired of you ridiculing my telescope collections.
Yeah. That's
no,
not gonna,
I'm kidding.
Just not going to do it.
That's
even your,
crazy,
even your 10-meter telescope.
Eight times large.
Yeah, it has
larger.
To be. They said that it would require about a 75 meter in diameter telescope to see the lunar rover that's left on the moon.
Wow.
I know. I for some reason thought you'd be able to spot that.
Yeah, it's just logically it's strange that we could physically get there
mm-hmm.
but not be able to see it.
It's an awful long way away.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's what I hear about the moon. That's why I haven't been yet.
It's a lonely place.
Lunar trucks.
Lunar trucks. Yes, we started to get there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was jumping
Go ahead
out.
And hit
okay.
me with what you know about
well,
it.
Well, we were talking about the driver, and one of the craziest things about this vehicle is that the driver has the perch, right? As
mm-hmm.
as you said, they can sit around, they can stand,
yep.
and they're almost at the center of the vehicle, on top everything, and the truck has these six wheels with two tires each.
Mm-hmm.
And so the steering here, not to get too bogged down, each wheel can be steered independently,
cool.
which has got to be incredibly complex for the driver. But, you know, it can, just like the older LRV. It can go forward, backwards, sideways, any combination thereof. Mm-hmm. It's like that elevator in Willy Wonka. You remember at the very end of the movie?
Yeah, it could go any direction.
Yeah, yeah. Not to spoil it for anybody. Just in case.
Yeah. Wait, are you talking about the early 1970s movie?
Yes, yeah.
Again.
My favorite version.
This has been around for 40 years, so go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And so...
You know, that's two podcasts in a row, I think, that you've given away the ending to a 40-year-old movie.
I know, man. God, I'm really getting bad at this. I need to... Okay. Yeah. So it can this... Not Willy Wonka's elevator, but this lunar truck can go about 15 miles an hour with nothing on it.
Blistering speed. Now, yeah. I think the LRV was capable of 12.
Still, fastest thing on the moon.
That is. It'll blow anything else on the moon away.
Right.
Yeah. And you know what? I just dug this up that it's able to carry four astronauts. Four astronauts at a time.
But it's not pressurized.
Yeah.
So they have to have their suits on.
Exactly. Yeah,
just like the older one.
Like the old one. And that's a big deal.
Huge deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. And that gets into the reason why I don't want to drive one of these. But if we want to talk about pressurized vehicles, they've got another one that is pressurized. Better for long excursions on the moon.
My absolute favorite.
Is it really?
This is my absolute favorite lunar vehicle.
You have probably seen this one then, right? Have you seen this one driving?
I saw a video.
Okay.
Where do you know which video I saw?
I'm going to guess. Go ahead.
All right. Do you want to... I'll give you one guess because I know you know it.
It was the inauguration.
It was the inauguration of the president, of the current president.
Yeah, it was at the tail end of the parade.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing, you know... It just looked really cool on the road.
It's like a space caboose.
It was really cool. Yeah, it was really cool. And this is the one, if you saw the inauguration, you saw this NASA vehicle that was tooling down the Pennsylvania Avenue there. Really cool looking thing. But the idea behind this one is that you're able to take it out for longer excursions and you're able to do more field work on the moon.
Like 3 days you could drive on the moon. That qualifies as a road trip.
3 days. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Can you imagine how far you could explore in 3 days? I mean, I don't know what top speed is on this thing.
6 miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
By the way.
Maybe not that far, but you could go a reasonable distance.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty cool about this one, and in a way... This one kind of scares me.
Okay.
Maybe more than the others. And we'll get into that.
Okay.
In a minute,
but, all right. A little bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah, the cool thing about this one is it's self-contained. It has bathrooms, of course, the shower and all that. Mm-hmm. It has all the scientific, you know, lab space that they would need. And I believe this one also has, doesn't it have a second pressurized chamber?
Yes.
Which is really cool. And this is a big deal to anybody that would be doing any kind of moon exploration because of the dust factor that we talked about before.
Right.
Prior to this, they would have to pressurize and depressurize the entire capsule.
Every time the door opened.
Exactly. And everybody would be, you know, everybody would have to do this. And they'd bring back in dust and sand and, you know, whatever else is out there. You know, moon men, particles, yeah. Blue cheese, whatever. And that's the second time. And so it was, you know, there was a potential for a lot of problems with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So hopefully with this one, there's going to be less possibility of equipment malfunction due to the surface of the moon.
And another reason that it's a very big deal to have a pressurized cabin that's mobile is the radiation or the potential for radiation, the enormous... I have to be honest with you, Scott. I can't name them all, but there's this overwhelming number of X factors that apply when there is an astronaut out walking in just in a suit. Because technically, you know, walking on the moon is still an EVA.
Mm-hmm.
We have very little defense.
Yeah, you're not protected by the atmosphere.
Right.
Exactly. You're not shielded by anything. You're just absorbing solar radiation.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little bit off that, but this thing is huge.
Yeah.
This thing. I mean,
how big is it?
I was looking at this. It's like a 70s game show.
I know.
The,
right?
The specs on this thing are unbelievable. It weighs something like nearly 9,000 pounds.
Crazy.
Nearly 9,000 pounds, which, as we said, it doesn't really matter, I guess, that much when you get on the moon. Because
yeah, those are Earth pounds, not moon pounds.
Earth pounds, that's right. And it's, let's see, it's 14.1 Earth feet high.
I like this.
Let's do it all like that. Yeah, okay, yeah. No, let's not do that. It's about 14.8 feet long, and it's about 13 feet wide. So this is a monster, and you'll see it in the video. If you watch the inauguration video at the end, or you can you can probably do a word search for just for this small pressurized rover. They call it the SPR.
Yeah.
And you probably would be able to find that just individually if you don't want to go through the whole inauguration video.
Do you know why this one's my favorite, Scott?
Why is that?
Because you can live in it, and it reminds me of a very heavily customized van.
You know what? It does. It does look like that. I didn't think of that when I saw it, but yeah, I'd buy that.
You know those van shows they have in Japan? If I could roll up there,
you know what? You would fit right in. This looks the last picture on this article definitely looks like a customized van.
But you still wouldn't want to drive one.
Okay, here's the reason.
Okay.
Here's the reason. I have no way to back this up. I mean, other than, you know, what they're telling me here in these articles and everything I've read through NASA, you're very limited with, you know, the ability to carry your own air, your air supply.
Sure.
Let's say that you get in this rover and you travel. They've got a minimum distance, and I'm going to flip through as we're talking here because there's a minimum distance that they, or maximum distance that they could travel.
For the pressurized one, it's 144 miles.
Okay. That's a significant distance. That has its own problems. I'll talk about that in a minute. But
okay. You're talking about
that's not your spacecraft. That's not how you get home. So that's the problem. Let's say you get 100 miles away.
Uh huh.
Okay. Going back to the lunar rover, the original lunar rover, I believe that they said that there's a distance maximum of somewhere around 20 miles, I think, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Now they've never actually gone farther than about 6 miles away from the original spacecraft. And that's because the fear that if this thing broke down and they weren't able to get back, they would have to be able to make it – they'd have to be able to walk back from wherever they break down.
And how much oxygen do they have with the suit?
Exactly. Let's say that you're 6 miles away and you've got about enough oxygen to make it 4 miles. What do you do? See my problem here?
I see your problem.
That's a big problem. And I know they've got this all figured out. They've got this all developed. But the thing with the pressurized vehicle is that you get long, long distances away. And if this thing breaks down or there's a problem with the systems within that, how much air can you carry? And also, how far can you really walk on the surface of the moon carrying your own supply? I don't know how far you would possibly be able to get if you took all of the supplies that you had with you. I know you're not carrying the samples and everything because that falls by the wayside at that point. But just trying to get yourself back to safety, which would be your spacecraft, how far could you get back? I mean, if you take that distance, if it has 144 miles range, half of that is, 70-something.
Right.
72 miles. So you could be potentially 72 miles. They wouldn't push it that far, but you could be 72 miles away. Are you going to walk 72 miles to get back?
No, I'm probably going to die on the moon.
See? See what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. But I think that's a valid point.
But you also brought up the redundancy thing.
And
there's so much redundancy built into these that it's safe. It really is safe.
But this is serious business, Scott. I mean, it's – you say it's safe. I only disagree because I believe it's as safe as it can be, which is still tremendously unsafe, my friend. Let us not forget we're strapping people to a rocket.
Correct.
And shooting them. You know,
it's
a long way.
Yeah, it's not safe to get there. I mean, you're taking risks right from the point the rockets ignite. But
I would still love to do it.
You know what? I would love to do it also, but I would always have that fear in mind that I'm going to be walking back to the spacecraft. So I don't think I would venture too far.
Really, man? You're going to stay in the spaceship?
I wouldn't take the rover out? No, you know what? I would go a safe walking distance in it. I know I sound like an old man or something, right?
No. I like maintain line of sight with the spaceship, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I would, get myself to the point where you can't see the spacecraft and something's going wrong.
Well, I don't want to end this on a down note, but I do have maybe a little bit of good news for you with that sobering
that would cheer
concern. Well, it shouldn't cheer you up, but I fear that it will. NASA and the current administration are having some funding readjustments. So our plan to get to the moon that we have been working on earlier, and actually during which our article on the site was written, may not be the same. So you probably won't have to worry anytime soon about getting drafted to drive that rover.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it wouldn't be fun.
Right.
Because it would be fun. I agree. But
would you do it in the desert on Earth?
Yeah, I would. Yeah,
okay.
I would. But you're in a different ballpark when you when the car breaks down and suddenly you can't breathe.
That's
okay.
True.
That's dramatic, but you know what I mean.
Well, yeah.
You know, you're trying to hoof it back 10 miles, and you've got 6 miles worth of oxygen.
Now you can jump a lot farther in the moon too. You could go a lot. True. You can kind of pogo back.
Maybe I could just kind of float horizontal to the surface, and you could push me.
What? I would use my oxygen so much faster than you.
Maybe you had more than me.
You would leave me there, man. They would say, there's a dead astronaut 4 miles away from the rover.
And another one somehow floated to safety.
One floated to safety. I guess we're done now.
Yeah,
right?
I hope so. Yeah, that's about okay. It. That's my unfounded fear.
That's you know, we can't end it on unfounded fear. How about some listener mail?
Love listener mail.
All right, Scott. So Vicente writes in and says, hi, guys. It's Vicente. He said some other stuff, too.
Okay.
He said that he listened to our podcast about DeLoreans, and he wanted to very politely give us a correction on the timeline. The movie Back to the Future was released in 1985, long after the brand had gone belly up, but not in 1981. The car was used because of its looks, not as a marketing strategy by DMC. The fact that the brand was no longer around was a major point in choosing the vehicle because the studio, he says, could do whatever it wanted without having to fear lawyers for suing them for misrepresentation or copyright infringement.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. I thought that possibly the film was shot, you know, how it's shot 2 years beforehand or
right.
3 years
yeah.
beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe there was a chance that the company is still around at that point, but on the tail end of, you know, mm-hmm. going out of business. Interesting to know yeah. that it, you know, was never around when the movie was released.
And I, you know, either way, that's I think the most interesting point because yeah. that seems pretty clever on the movie maker's part
to continue to use that vehicle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. They're able to do what they want with it. I've got something that's incredibly related.
That, all right.
This is just by chance. I was going to save this for another podcast, but
let's do it right now.
Let it fly right now.
All right.
1 week ago, I spotted a DeLorean right here in Buckhead, which on the road, which is kind of unusual because usually you see them in garages and barns and things
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of crazy.
It's
right here in Buckhead. It was in a parking lot in a shopping center. Looked beautiful, by the way, nice and shiny. The original stainless steel. It had a Fulton County plate, so that's a Georgia,
yeah.
Probably Atlanta.
Atlanta Metro County.
The license plate was McFly 1.
No way.
I thought that was pretty cool. It was really neat. It was in good shape.
Yeah.
As far as I could see, exterior anyways. But I drove by it twice, just, you know, because that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to get out and peek in just in case the owner came back and was angry or something. But I wrote down the license plate because I figured I wanted to remember this for, you know, another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are talking about DeLorean again.
So that's a shout out to McFly One there.
Yeah, that's right. If he or she's listening in the Buckhead area, howdy do.
Nice car.
Yeah, nice car.
Nice car is what we have to say. Yeah. And, to all our listeners out there, you guys, thanks so much for tuning in. If you happen to be an astronaut and we got something wrong, we do apologize. But also thanks for listening. And whether or not you're an astronaut, if you have any suggestions for upcoming episodes, topics, or anecdotes, which we love, then send us an email.
At highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.